This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Dry Shampoo. Dry Shampoo. Because mommy didn't have time for a shower today, but she still needs to go out in public. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is called Recipes from Little Women. In the last episode, I did a close reading of Chapter 7 of Little Women, focusing on the role pickled limes played in the economy and social structure of Amy March's school. But I thought it would be fun to follow up by talking about the limes themselves, as well as another food that serves as an important plot point. Meg's failed currant jam from Chapter 24. Little Women is loaded with rich details about food and meals, which helps to build a picture of a real, living world. Recreating recipes gives readers the chance to touch, smell, and taste the same things as the characters, making the experience of reading more fun and memorable. In Chapter 7, 12-year-old Amy is punished by her teacher after she is caught with pickled limes in her desk. In the last episode, I took a close look at the events of this chapter, which paint a timeless picture of the agonies of preteen social dynamics. Had Little Women been set in a later time, Amy might have gotten in trouble for having Pez dispensers, silly putty, troll dolls, Cabbage Patch Kids, Garbage Pail Kids, Tamagotchi, or Pokemon cards. Today, I'm not talking about the dynamics of trends, but the trend itself. Modern readers can understand getting in trouble for having something that's been banned from school, but the limes themselves can seem quite alien. But it's not that complicated. They were a tasty treat, and they were really cheap, so they were popular with kids in the 19th century. Really sour treats have always been loved by kids, although today candies like Atomic Warheads or Mega Sours are around and have a lot more sugar in them. Fresh limes were expensive back then because fruit had a short shelf life. A pretty hefty tax was slapped on them. To make them more attractive to consumers, Caribbean lime farmers would slice them up and pack them in salt water, sometimes adding vinegar, chilies, or spices. They no longer counted as a fresh fruit now, but a pickled preserve, allowing them to avoid extra taxation. The pickling process gave them a longer shelf life too, allowing them to be even cheaper. They went for a penny each. To give you an idea of what that cost, in the 1860s, minimum wage laborers earned about 10 cents an hour. Amy mooches a quarter off of Meg, representing 2.5 hours of low-skill work such as washing dishes or cleaning floors. Kids would buy as many of these limes as they could afford. They'd suck on the pulp until that was gone, and then after that, they could chew on the rind. A few years ago, while reading Little Women, I got curious and started making them myself. After trying them, I finally understood why kids liked them so much, and why teachers loathed them. They have an intense, sour, salty flavor, and the pulp is very soft. That's the best part of the lime, but it disappears the quickest. The rind isn't as intense, but it's easy to imagine a kid chewing on it until every last bit of flavor is gone. A teacher would definitely not want them anywhere near a classroom, because after you eat one, your fingers are all wet and covered in lime juice, and you also have this wet lime rind that you need to throw away. 19th century candy stores didn't have plastic bags. It was only paper back then, so I can only imagine how gross it would be if a packet of limes leaked into a student's desk. Back then, teachers had to clean their own classrooms, no janitors, so I understand why they would ban pickled limes. If you want to try making them, I use a simple recipe from the book The Joy of Pickling by Linda Ziedrich. Pickled limes are really tasty in the way that super sour candies are, but since there's no added sugar, they only have 2.5 calories in each wedge and won't give you cavities. Pickled limes are easy to make. Make a saltwater solution with a little less than 1 teaspoon per cup of water. This gives you about the same salt concentration as seawater, which was often used back then. If you're doing more than one jar, make sure the salt has fully dissolved into the water, so you have the same concentration in each batch. Wash your limes and slice each one into 8 wedges. You can also leave the limes whole after cutting a deep X shape into them, but fewer of them will fit into a jar. Loosely pack each jar with lime wedges, and then pour the salt water over them, filling it enough to completely cover the limes and leaving very little air at the top. Put the lids on nice and tight and then sit them in the fridge for 2 or 3 weeks. Then crack them open, remove them from the salt brine, and give them a try. I'm sure you knew this already, but don't drink the salt water. Limes made this way won't keep without refrigeration, and you should eat the limes within a few days of opening the jar. If you're an experienced home canner, you can process the jars so they'll be shelf-stable for a year. There are a lot of 19th century recipes that you can dig up with variations on this. I've seen some that use vinegar, salt, and dried chili flakes. Those would go great with pozole or tacos. I've also made them by adding a little sugar into the salt water, which makes them a nice replacement for an umeboshi plum in a bento box. Pickled limes go nicely if you're doing a spread of cold meat, cheese, fruit, and pickles at a party. And they're also nice on their own when you get a craving for a treat, but don't want something loaded with sugar and calories. The second recipe from Little Women that I want to look at is Meg's currant jam. As a newlywed, she gets really excited to make jam from the currants growing around the house she shares with her husband, John. It doesn't go well. Determined to do things their own way, Meg and John came up with the stupid idea to never ask for help in any of their domestic affairs. So instead of having her mother or the family servant Hannah come around to pass on some valuable expertise, Meg charges in to do it alone. This chapter inspires deep sympathy from me because we have all started a recipe with grand plans of culinary perfection, but then it all goes wrong and what we end up with does not make a lovely picture for Instagram. It's frustrating to see good ingredients go to waste and embarrassing to accept that you've done something horribly wrong. So what's happening here? The passage reads, home came 4 dozen delightful little pots, half a barrel of sugar, and a small boy to pick the currants for her. With her pretty hair tucked into a little cap, arms bared to the elbow, and a checked apron which had a coquettish look in spite of the bib, the young housewife fell to work, feeling no doubts about her success, for hadn't she seen Hannah do it hundreds of times? The array of pots rather amazed her at first, but John was so fond of jelly, and the nice little jars would look so well on the top shelf, that Meg resolved to fill them all, and spent a long day picking, boiling, straining, and fussing over her jelly. She did her best. She asked advice of Mrs. Cornelius. She racked her brain to remember what Hannah did that she left undone. She reboiled, resugared, and restrained, but that dreadful stuff wouldn't gel. Mrs. Cornelius is Mary Cornelius, who wrote The Young Housekeeper's Friend, or A Guide to Domestic Economy and Comfort. This was the standard reference book for housekeeping in the 19th century. We can't even imagine how easy we have it today with great cleaning products available at the grocery store and online tools to help with budgeting. In the years before electricity, refrigeration, and household appliances, everything had to be done by hand and made from scratch. Mrs. Cornelius helped a lot of young housekeepers save money and manage their households more smoothly, although it would seem she had no help for Meg's jam. Meg boils, she adds sugar, and the stuff stays runny. She boils till it burns, but it never turns into jam. John Brooke comes home to find his wife completely defeated sitting on the floor and crying about the long, hot, horrible day she's had with nothing to show for it but a filthy kitchen. To make jam, you need a combination of heat, liquid, sugar, pectin, and acid. These things work together to make a jam that is nicely gelled and balanced in flavor between sweet and tart. So why is Meg's jam runny? Currants are naturally high in acid, which will discourage jam from gelling. Very acidic preserves, such as currant jam or marmalade, need a lot of sugar not just for balancing sweetness, but to help with thickening. Pectin, a fiber found in fruit, is what makes jams have that gelled texture. Meg seems to add plenty of sugar. She boils and sugars and strains. Currants are pretty mushy, especially when they're picked ripe, as the book describes. Inside there are a few small, hard seeds which would need to be strained out, but I wonder if Meg's mistake was to strain too early. Pectin is concentrated in the skins of soft fruits, and if they're removed before they've melted away, then the jam will be lacking a key ingredient. I suspect Meg's rookie mistake was to strain the jam right after the fruit had mushed up, instead of letting it simmer long enough for the pectin to come out as the skins melted away. If you ever make jam at home using soft fruit such as peaches, plums, grapes, or currants, make sure to let it bubble gently until the skins have fully broken down, and don't bother straining the jam unless you need to remove seeds or other debris. I hope you now have some ideas about how food can help young readers connect with the characters in a novel. So many stories have a special food moment. The first time I read The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe to my oldest daughter, I had a piece of Turkish delight ready for her when the White Witch offered some to Edmund. We are currently reading Anne of Green Gables together, and I plan to make some raspberry cordial for us to sip when we get to the chapter about Anne and Diana's horribly failed tea party. If you're a parent or teacher that plans to read Little Women with your kids sometime soon, flip through it. You'll get lots of ideas for ways to bring the food to life. You could recreate any one of the dozens of meals mentioned, involving the kids in as much of the preparation as you can. Amy's horrible pickled lime ordeal in Chapter 7 would certainly be made more memorable if young readers got to taste these treats while hearing about how Amy and her classmates are deprived of them. If you have any ideas about literary culinary moments that you can recreate with kids, let me know about them. I'd love to hear about how you've used food to make a story sweeter for you and your young readers. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.